Brothers, sisters, friends, we're at a critical point in the state of race relations in the United Kingdom. The new racism is aimed at Muslims. You know you've reached a new low when you see the reinstatement of Kilroy and his ilk to BBC's Question Time. He was sacked from daytime TV for describing Arabs as suicide bombers, limb amputators and women's oppressors. We don't need him on TV at night now. Yeah, feel free to clap if you want to. We also know we've reached a new low when the management of the Daily Star tried to print what they believe was a humorous joke, the Daily Fatwa, making fun of, making disgraceful remarks about Muslims. But we also have the beacon of hope in the fact that the journalists at the Daily Star said, we are not going to run this rubbish. The BNP used the loophole in the law to focus on Islam. Security forces across the world looking for some way to justify their existence after the end of the Cold War focused on Islam. But above all else, the reason why we're seeing the rise of anti-Islamic racism is because of the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. We had a version of it earlier with David Blumkett deliberately echoing Margaret Thatcher in talking about swamping, saying who people could and couldn't marry, telling people to speak English at home, just like those representatives of the British Empire abroad used to speak the indigenous languages there so well. And I predict that we'll soon be seeing the David Blunkett book of English cookery, which will be compulsory in every Asian household. In recent weeks, Labour ministers have been queuing up and falling over themselves to parade their political virility on questions of race and Islam. John Reid, who's outdoing John Howard, who was described as something of the night by throwing in the Dawn Raid as well, has enjoined Muslim parents to shop their children to police. Jack Straw, who actually was one of the most progressive Home Secretaries in terms of race relations, and the Race Relations Amendment Act came out under him, but he pitched in with the suggestion that Muslim women remove their full face veils at his surgery because he felt uncomfortable. Then we have Bill Rammell, Minister for Lifelong Learning. You may not know his name because there's a lot of talk about lifelong learning, but the ministers never last more than about a year. He voiced his support for Imperial College London's ban on students wearing the veil and suggested it should be extended to cover our members, the lecturers. Gordon Brown, of course, explained that this all helped integration. And now we have the Department of Education and Skills, at the behest of something called JTAC, I think, Joint Terrorism Action Committee from the Cabinet, preparing draft advice to universities and colleges on recognising Islamist extremists and alerting special branch. It came out yesterday with the longest title ever seen on a government document. It's called Promoting Good Campus Relations, that was put in as a SOP to us, Working with staff and students to build community cohesion, that's as a result of the emphasis of Trevor Phillips, and tackling violent extremism in the name of Islam at universities and colleges, a sledgehammer to crack a nut. There's a real danger that our members may and students may be sucked into anti-Muslim McCarthyism with serious consequences for academic freedom and civil liberties. I think we should never forget that the Nazification of the universities in Germany, then seen as the centre of Western civilization, Beethoven, Schiller, Goethe, etc., it took only a few months for them to throw all the Jewish academics out of the universities in the 1930s, and initially people said, oh, it's a bit unfair on poor Rubinstein, quite like that bloke, but pretty soon that turned into an unseemly scramble by people to get the professors' jobs which had been done by the Jewish people who were thrown out. The DEF proposals to vet student societies suggest that this suggests that Islamic separatism, inflamed by inspirational leaders, leads to radicalization in a supposedly unstoppable sequence that leads to terrorism. The theory, if such a sixth form essay should be dignified with the term theory, is that, in fact, it's not even at the level of a sixth form essay, is that multiculturalism, those who've been following the wit and wisdom of Trevor Phillips will be aware of this bit, multiculturalism leads to segregation and ethnic ghettos, or as they're called in this document, ethnically segregated communities. I actually thought that multiculturalism led to respect and that racism was the cause of segregation. I was visiting some distant in-laws in Esher, Surrey, the other week, and there was a fair amount of racism about, and it was certainly an ethnic ghetto. Bill Rammell has also made himself well known recently. I don't know if it's something to do with him having the slimmest majority in Harlow, but justifying cutting funding for English for speakers of other languages by two-thirds just a few weeks after he wrote an article for The Guardian which was headlined ESOL, English for Speakers of Other Languages, the Key to Integration. Actually, what's going on is, if you can follow this, the theory that multiculturalism leads to segregation, mix in a bit of Islam, you get radicalization. That then leads to extremism, to violent extremism and terrorism, inexorably. And the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which clearly subscribes to the thesis, has offered, in case anyone here needs a bit, 1.3 million for research on countering radicalization by countering terrorism by countering radicalization. Radicalization is not caused by cultural segregation. The Muslim communities at the bottom of the social pile in this country, and you don't have to be the head of the British Army to know that foreign policy in Iraq and Afghanistan leads to young people being radicalized. If you're a black university student, if you're a thinking university student, and you're not radicalized by the experience these days, you're not paying attention. If you're not radicalized, you're not only out of touch with reality, you're out of touch with humanity. But for Tony Blair, such an explanation is unthinkable. The idea that the war causes the radicalization is forbidden to be spoken by any government minister. So the search for a cause ends up in casting blame on Islam itself. The elephant in the room, or as Bob Dylan put it, the only person on the scene missing is the war. The war that actually led, for example, to the taking of millions of pounds from higher education and led to top-up fees for students. The document in its earlier drafts, and I'm sure in its popularized drafts, clearly mixed radicalism and terrorism. The distinction was blurred. And if you've been watching Newsnight in recent days, it's been blurred as well. Radicalism is not terrorism, and identifying radicalism gives no one the right to contact Special Branch. Paradoxically, those bastions of social and religious segregation, public schools and faith foundations, receive support from government, and we're not short of government ministers with extreme religious views. Indeed, Tony Blair says he had conversations with God to ensure that he was doing God's will in relation to Iraq. God must have been out that day because Tony Blair was clearly talking to himself. If you look at the Old Testament, there's a lot of focus on Islam, but you'll find in the Old Testament and also in the book of Revelations, which apparently 60% of Americans believe in, slavery is justified, woman's oppression is taken for granted, concubinage is assumed, you can rape the wives of your enemies and have sex with your slaves. Anything that Islam is accused of, you can find in the religious texts of Christianity and also of Judaism. What we're facing is not just Islamophobia, fear of Islam, but old-fashioned Muslim bashing, and it's our duty to stand with those under attack. Now, when it was publicised that I was speaking today and at another rally on Monday, I had conversations with gay rights, women's rights and secular activists saying that I shouldn't go on platforms with various Muslim organisations who don't agree with us on everything. And I've had to argue we need alliances to defend whoever is being oppressed at the moment. People have come back and said, oh, you should have no hierarchy of oppression. But actually, the civil rights movement didn't wait for the liberation movement, neither did the women's liberation movement wait for the gay liberation movement, nor did the gay liberation movement wait for the disability rights movement, but they all learned from each other. I've also had a typical response from some of our members saying, oh, this is a bit of a difficult question, we clearly need a bit more research on it. And I pointed out that we didn't need research to say there was something wrong with Bombs on Brick Lane or at the Admiral Duncan pub. Muslim bashing actually leads to isolation and fear. There are a friend of mine, a young woman friend, is frightened to go in the street. She was involved in the bombings on the tube train, the one that followed the one that was bombed. People are living in real fear because of this current climate. Someone else I know has had to go to have treatment for panic attacks. Salma Yacoub, a Birmingham councillor who many of you will know, has said recently, hope I'm not pinching what she wants to say this afternoon, but I've quoted it at lots of places, for those of us who are trying to overcome conservative barriers within Muslim communities, the current climate makes that job more difficult, not less. Right now, we need unity between Muslims and non-Muslims to defend the model of multicultural Britain that we enjoy, with toleration of religious and cultural differences at its core. The stronger the anti-racist culture we create in this country as a whole, the greater the space we create within Muslim communities for progressive currents to take reactionary cultural policy, to tackle reactionary cultural policies. I'm proud to be here today speaking alongside Salma, I think who's here this afternoon, and our other Muslim brothers and sisters to say we stand with you, we oppose the war, we want the troops out, and we will do everything we can to fight the current climate of Islamophobia and to stop Muslim bashing. Thank you.